This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Welcome to episode 434 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This episode, we'd like to thank co-producer Anna L. Before we get into the. I don't know what to call this, housekeeping, or it's not a regular segment.
It could be housekeeping.
No, housekeeping is fine.
I'm just saying, when's the last time you saw me?
When's the last time you saw me?
Exactly.
If we have something to chat about, which we typically have something, we'll do it up top to get it done. And you guys can, like, I don't know, fast forward through it if you don't want to hurt. I just asked her because we have not really chatted. And we typically send each other links and things like, what do you think about this? Especially TikTok.
I mean, we are still sisters.
I mean, sometimes. I mean, yes.
Always.
Always.
Whether or not you want it to be true.
Change the Look, I did not say that. It came out weird. Sometimes. From time to time, we are Schwester. Schwester. That's bad. Yeah. No. So what I asked some, because I just wanted to know, and it didn't really belong on the show, but then Summer's like, well, people, you know, sometimes, you know, are curious. I just asked her because I have not been sharing. I think you actually shared something and I didn't have a chance to look at it yet. We typically share things that are funny or, you know, titillating, whatever, like something that is shocking or whatever, entertaining in some way from TikTok. TikTok's a thing we usually share links to for funny videos or whatever. And I just asked her because we have not been sharing and I have not talked to her in the last few days. I asked her, please tell me. For future listeners, this is being recorded Thursday, July 6th, 2023. And that's not important in general. You come to it when you come to it. We are all evergreen. However, or eventually every episode is evergreen. However, what I'm about to say is important. Like a timestamp is important because it might make sense looking back at this or listening back to this. I was curious about what was on her FYP. If you're familiar with TikTok, you know what that means. It's your For You page. It's the algorithm that they're really well known for. And it is uncanny. And Summer and I basically, not 100%, but like 94% the same FYP. It's ridiculous.
I'm just saying, if you don't have a lady on an airplane complaining about somebody not being real, then are you even TikToking? Like, that is,
yes, exactly. At least this week, and that's why I gave the date. So that's all I wanted to know from her was what she was currently seeing the most of, and she mentioned the lady on plane. Yeah, that's it. Woman on a plane, lady on a plane.
No,
if you know, you
everyone
know.
Has a conspiracy theory about it. Like, it's insane.
So we're not here to talk about that. As far as going into what that video is, because if you know, you know. If you don't know, I swear, just go to TikTok. You will type in lady on a plane, woman on a plane, and you'll find it. A few weeks ago, up until probably what, last week? So about a week or week and a half, I was eyeball or nose hair deep in everything Titan Submersible. And Summer was like, I'm done.
I was done with that.
I could not
like
stop.
Between
anyway.
You and my FYP page, I was like,
Ginger, everything I'm you done. Sent me, I've seen.
And then I turned on Netflix and they were like, watch Titanic. And I said,
oh,
no,
seriously,
thank you.
Right? Oh my gosh. Okay, so that was my little thing. Well, that was the unplanned
thing. Are you
ready
for
thing?
Me? What I have to say is the plan. This is not planned, but it should have been planned because here's my planned thing. Y'all, it's almost time for Comic-Con.
Aw.
And Ginger's not joining me this year.
I was about to say, Summer's going to say, I am so happy to announce the lineup.
I'm not
for...
happy to announce it. I'm not happy to announce
joking.
It.
Like, I'm joking.
I was so reluctant to take over her MC position that we put somebody else as the top dog for this panel because I was not comfortable filling those shoes. But Ginger has decided to go with her choir to be fantastic, amazing, and sing. They will not be in country to attend Comic-Con with us. Comic-Con. So it's coming up before you know it. We're like two and a half weeks away from our, what is this, fifth Outlander or fourth? Yeah, it's like fifth panel, isn't it? Fifth?
I thought you meant like our fifth time attending. I'm like, girl, I've been going since 2014.
I just think we've had five panels.
But our panel, yeah, I think it's five.
I'm just saying.
If you're going to be in San Diego, there's nothing else Outlander planned, to my knowledge, at Comic-Con this year. Not from the proper sources. We are the improper source.
It wouldn't make sense for them to be there while the show is airing.
I kid you not. I'm honestly more excited about this panel than I have been for a while. And I'll tell you why, because we can make guesses about what they're going to do with the season, because the season is actively airing when we're going to be.
Oh, that's true. We've never had that panel.
So that's we can have a real kind of a talk back about it. So this is actually kind of exciting. And no, I don't regret having somebody else be the spearhead of this, because I still don't like being the spearhead of anything.
So exciting. And I don't get to be a part of it.
You won't this year, but you're going to do something fun too. Hang on, I have to cough.
I'm sure.
But if you are going to Comic-Con and you have some free time on maybe Thursday between 3 and 4 p.m. and you're anywhere near the library, which is next to the Petco area, it's not in the main hall, because we are still, you know, just the tiny potatoes who fill in buffer time to give people things to do when everything else is packed. But if you do have time and you are around the library, we will have links to where it's going to be. We will be having a panel to talk about all things Outlander. Less holds barred than these conversations, because I know Ginger holds me to a lot more
bars
of a harder... Like, I can't even talk about something that might come up next week. Like... I can't even talk about something that happens at the end of the episode, at the beginning of the episode. That's how much she hates spoilers. So that being said,
that's not a spoiler. That's just not chronological order. But I totally get it. I totally get it. You're not 100% wrong.
So please come join us. It will be myself. It will be Sarah Kaizak from Outlander TV News. It will be Heather Inslee from SoCal Edition, Outlander SoCal Edition. We love her. And Catherine Stinson, who also writes for the Outlander TV News. We will be there on the Thursday, July 20th from 3 to 4 at the Neil Morgan Auditorium at the San Diego Central Library at Comic-Con. So if you are there, don't be square. Come join us.
Before we get to the actual 704, because this is about 703 and prior. Okay. This is not a furthering of a discussion. This is to address past stuff-ish. It's regarding the bugs. And as I had wondered, I have been, I guess, vehement with my opinion about how production, in general, good, bad, indifferent, whatever, in general has treated the bugs as far as their importance being dropped, whatever. However you want to characterize that. So I've been very opinionated, right? As I wondered, even as I expressed, not confusion, but whatever I expressed, however you'd characterize that, I also said several times, maybe not every episode, but several times, I know in our lives, I know on our show, it is possible that it is not the same person who was doing the, not the evil, but the overtly meaner things, right? So it seems that the actor who was flat out rude, or at least in the time after Malva, when they came to arrest Claire, at least that scene, that was not Mrs. Bug.
Now, I don't think anyone would disagree that Mrs. Bug has had pissy moments, but I believe that your ire was pointed instead, was incorrectly pointed at Ms. Bug and was meant for the Fisherfolk lady.
No. My ire was not for Mrs. Bug. My ire was not for the actress or character. My ire was for the writers. Now, I think the ire is not misplaced in general, meaning their portrayal of the bugs from the minute we see them till their end, right? That has not changed. However, yes, it was the woman who, actress and character, who was severely rude, or I don't know how you'd say that, but in that scene, who was like calling for her, basically off with her head without saying that, right? That was absolutely not Mrs. Bug. But it does not change my point from the very beginning when we first saw them on the screen and we're like, wait, they're at this like Kaylee now, like outdoor dance. It's not bad to show them dancing, but we got zip-a-doodle from them, right? Not from, well, from the writers.
Right. And here's how I would characterize the conversation from the last episode. I believe that I stated that I think that I thought you were mistaken. But the bottom line is, I ultimately agree with you on the stance that they have not really ingratiated us to the bugs. So they have been a presence. They have been employed. They have been part of the household. But other than that, they have not really ingratiated themselves, or they have not tried to ingratiate them to us as viewers. Now, book readers, we know we're supposed to care about them a little bit, so we have been. But I wonder how that has affected the non-book readers.
To the best of my recollection, when we did our live, I don't think anyone's reached out to us to answer that question. Because we asked that question last time. We've asked it before, but I definitely asked it last episode. But we put it, and I know you were there for a hot minute before you were kicked out. But in our live last
brutal.
To discuss 703, there may be more than one person, but I do remember at least one person specifically saying she was a show-only viewer and it did not bother her. Now, she did not say that she thought the bugs were really, really, really well introduced or developed. That's not what she said. But she said, because my question was very specific, right? Does it bother you, or do you notice a lack of whatever? Or maybe more, noticing a lack isn't necessarily negative. It's just an observation. But my question was very pointed, right? Do you notice it? Because I was asking about a negative. And her answer was, it did not bother me. So it didn't say she didn't recognize it. It didn't say they couldn't have done more. But it said, and she didn't say she agreed, and she didn't say she disagreed. I mean, obviously, she disagreed in that it bugged me. It didn't bug her. But she didn't say she agreed or disagreed with regard to their lack of development or ingratiating them to us. So, because that was not my question, right? So there is at least one viewer who is probably representative of several hundreds, if not thousands, who have not read the books, who only watched the show. And my guess is, I'm not trying to put words into her mouth, but my guess, by it not bothering a show-only viewer, well, obviously, number one, it's not that they don't care about the show. They probably love the show. It's that it was kind of neither here nor there, which to me actually supports my opinion. If you don't care enough, sorry, not if you don't care. If they haven't been developed, you're not going to care. But if someone says that the lack of caring does not affect them when someone brings it to their attention, then that to me does show a loss by the writers, because we are supposed to care. Does that make sense?
We should care. And as far as Mrs. Bug is concerned, was I sad she died? Sure. I don't like it when anybody dies.
I was crying at that funeral. They did such a good job.
But not because of any kind of personal interaction we as an audience had with them.
It was a lack thereof.
Yeah. Are we ready for episode
yes,
4?
Please, please.
All right.
Please,
let's move right along to our episode recap of season 7, episode 4, entitled A Most Uncomfortable Woman. And we all had to know that had to be about Claire.
I mean, I thought about that. I did think about that. And I do have something to say. I want to ask you a question about that in just a second. Okay, so we start with a cold open where we started Lalibra, and we see the orange car. Now, that may not be the same type of car, but if I'm not mistaken, the car that Roger has in the books in the 80s, and who knows when he got it. He could have had it before. I don't know. They were not gone that long. Like, no, that's not true. They were gone a while. It was an orange Morris Minor. I think I may be wrong in the pronounce in the, like the actual words, but I think it's a Morris Minor or Morris Mini, something like that. So when we saw them last episode, 703, I was like, oh, his car's blue. It's not their car. But then we learned they don't live here yet. I was like, oh, we may or may not get it. And we got the orange car. So that's a reader. That's like I won't say Easter egg, but that's for the readers. Like, watchers don't care. And I don't mean they shouldn't care or should care. But they don't, again, like, not knowing about the bugs means it doesn't matter to you either way. Not knowing about the orange car, it doesn't matter to you either way. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
We're like, oh my God, the orange car. Or some of us. Well, me anyway, sometimes.
Yeah, I don't care about an orange car.
No, it's not that I care about it. It's like, it's for the readers. That's all. It's for the readers. And also they tell us a year. You know how rare that is? They told us where, obviously, Lally Brock, we know if you look at it, you know. But maybe for the show only watchers, they haven't seen Lallybroch since what? Season 3? Is that true?
It feels like it.
Oh my God.
I feel like,
no, four when what's her name was back. And she, because Jenny, because we lost our Jenny, she met with our Ian. And he pulled Jenny duty. I get it. Like, it's been, we're in season seven. It's been since four at least, or minimally, that they may not know. They're not necessarily into everything. They may have not visited it like three or four times like we have. So I get it. It's properly Mid-Hope Castle, but it is known as Lallybroch. And what they hardly ever, ever, ever do is give us a date, right? Normally it doesn't matter because we're all in the 18th century. But we were in the 20th century last week and they gave us zip-a-doodle squat.
No, you're right. But this week they started it and they were like, so we've been doing this for 2 years and it's 1980.
Da-da, to be true, I only want to be with you. I was like, oh, the music, oh my gosh. Love it, love it, love it.
That's not an 80s song.
I didn't say it was, but that was the music playing on his car. Girlfriend.
I'm just saying, I'm like, that was not an 80s song.
We meet our new Mandy and Jem. And I will say, for as much as Jem, well, like, I guess it's probably even. I don't know the ages they're supposed to be portraying. Sorry, for the show. In the book, it is different because that was not a three-year-old.
No, but if we assume that that 2 years have passed since the last episode, mm-hmm. so if Mandy is currently, what, six? Let's say five, just to split the difference, right?
I can say
five. So 2 years ago, she would have been three, which seems a little bit too big for the pram, but she could have been in it. I don't know. And I don't know what their intentions were. And I didn't look enough at the other actors, and it was far enough away that I couldn't tell.
Well, we didn't know what they looked like. So if we had looked at the kids playing around the yard, they may have been there.
The reason that I thought about it when the whole thing went down, when I went back and rewatched it, was because Fiona very clearly stated they're out with the girls, Ernie and the girls. So that means that Fiona and Ernie only have girls. And there were three girls and Jem playing. So there was a very high probability that Mandy was either in the pram or one of the girls. But her mentioning the three girls were all outside playing kind of indicated to me that perhaps Mandy was in the carriage. So I was going to give you that.
Well, and even if we all believe that or know that, we're still not given a time, right? So I agree with you. 3 years is a bit big to be in a pram like that, but who knows? Because she has giant, well, in the books, giant parents. So, and here, giant grandchildren. Giant.
She has no grandchildren. You stop it.
Grandparents.
You're terrible at this game.
Huh. So then, and they're living in a caravan for 2 years. Holy monks. And then major renovations. They go inside to show us the, of course, fake Lallybroch. It's the set or some set or an and
did they have a caravan in the books? I don't recall there being a caravan because I recall them being immediately in the house by the time we got in the house. Like, they weren't talking about renovations anymore. It was already renovated, was it not?
By the time we get with them, they're already in the house and it's already renovated.
Got
so
it.
Yes. And that all happened in 3-ish years. So as they're inside walking around, the guy's like, sorry, it's gonna be more expensive. And she's like, damn it, blah blah blah. But there you get the sense that they've, like, what is that phrase that our mom says and we always like, oh my god, mom, you can't say that, they blown their wad.
Please never let our mother say that.
So as we're shown around to different things that have been done or are being done to Lallybroch, I looked up to see who that dude was and it just said builder Graham something, but I'm always curious at this point, because if you look at the IMDb page for the episode before it's released, it's not officially released till the 7th. Today's the 6th. You'll see it says top cast, like the people who are highlighted in the episode itself. It's way too many, but it's got like Lotta Verbeek. I mean, it's got all these people. And I'm like, she was not on that episode. I watched it twice. What's going on? No. So what it does is before it's released, before, basically, understandably, Starz does not want, right, all the info to get out. You know, who's highlighted, who the main characters are, in case there are any surprises, whatever. So I was like, did I miss all that? I could have missed one. But anyway, one of the people, there was someone there specifically mentioned, and I was like, I wonder if that was him. So I had to wait until, I didn't think about it until I was taking notes. I waited until the very end. And then I had to look at the credits because the credits will name people who, you know, who are highlighted or who have speaking roles, et cetera, who are identified. And it just said builder. So, and the actor's name who played the builder was Graham something. And the person I was looking at IMDb, who's a certain person we're going to meet in the future in the 20th century, it was not him. That's all I'll say. So it was just a builder. Nothing shady yet. As we are looking around at Reno's, whatever. Now, I'm not saying it was part of it. I am saying I heard an oboe. So I am not saying that Frank's theme diddled anywhere. I am just saying it was a pretty bare oboe too. Like, there wasn't a ton of instrumentation. It was pretty skinny. So the oboe definitely was audible and stuck out in a beautiful way. And then we get it dingle dingles over to, and we get a smidge of their theme. Roger, mm-hmm. Breathing.
I'm just laughing at you because you know that I didn't hear any of that.
Oh, yeah, I know.
I can't. I always try. And I promise you, after we talk about it, I do go back
and
try to hear it. But I literally can't because I'm listening to the dialogue, which means I can't listen to the music. The music is just ambient for me.
So then so that is the cold open. And then we get the song, which I didn't notice much of the opening sequence having changed. I don't know. I didn't notice it.
It changed?
Not the audio, but I mean, even the visuals.
Oh, I didn't even notice. Sorry.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying I didn't notice anything. Then we get the title card. I'm guessing it's Bree because I looked at the hands. The hands were kind of slender. They didn't look like dude's hands, but I could be wrong because we don't get a face. But it was either Bree or Roger. I'm guessing Bree was uncovering a cloth from the desk. Another thing for us book readers. Now, might it become important to the show? I certainly hope so. But for right now, book readers are gagging for that. So at least I am. Did you notice it was the desk? I know you know it was a desk. Did you think immediately of the desk?
I don't know if I thought it was the desk.
How do you not know?
I saw a desk, but I don't know if it's the desk. I'm not making that kind of an assumption.
It's a desk in Lallybroch in the 20th century because you can tell from the clothing that of the person was wearing. And it was jeans and like a checkered top.
Sure.
Okay. The title, as Summer said, a most uncomfortable woman is 100% Claire, but it's also Brie.
There have been times over the years where I felt like both Claire and or Jamie maybe had deserved like an acting accolade, but I shit you not. Tom Christie, whoever this actor is, I don't know his name because I haven't paid that much attention. And that makes me an awful person, but he is killing it.
He killed it. He's done.
Like, if you look at the character he was last year and watched, and oh my God, the progression of his character from last season to this season, I am just like, screw Kate and Sam, man. He is killing it.
Mark Lewis Jones. Let's talk
Good
about it.
God.
Yeah. So the scene or set of scenes, sequence, whatever, in North Carolina that takes place later on, which we can definitely reference. Let's chat about Tom Christie. Maybe not in particulars, but just overall. That I got it. Yes. So I love that they wrapped up the Tom Christie storyline. Like, they respected that. I was so happy.
That was like a legit book.
Oh my, it was
100%. All of it.
100%.
Like, they were like, we're not even going to write this part because Diana already did.
Even if, let's say, and I know this is not the truth, but let's say except for when they had flashbacks to Arzamir, because that's dumb. Every time we see him when he arrives on the ridge, every time we see him on the ridge until now, let's just say every single time he's on the screen, except for Arzamir, he's wearing the same exact outfit. And when he has a hat, it's the same hat. Let's just say he never changes what he looks like. Okay.
Correct.
Even if everything he wore was identical, his face alone, and I know that's like the whole point of acting, right? His face was a different person.
Dude, like, yes.
He all was of it. Like, so happy and calm. He had like zero wrinkles. He wasn't even like having an anger face.
He did older. Man kisser.
He's older. Oh,
so I'm like, okay. If he was going to go in, I'm like, if you've been wanting to kiss that lady for how long now? And this is your one opportunity and you didn't even try to slip her the tongue.
Oh,
I'm like,
my.
You were old man kissing her.
I don't know if Tom even knows what the tongue is supposed to do.
He was married to a witch. He says he loves witches. They're evil temptress women.
You know what I mean?
But he looks so happy and calm. Summer said it before I could. His entire demeanor is completely changed. He is this 100%. This actor deserves something. He stole the entire episode as far as acting wise.
For real, I have a lot of other things to say too.
So you want to come back to it when we get back to it? Okay.
We can come back to Tom Christie because I have things to say about Mr. William Ransom.
So after we see the title and the desk, couldn't think of the word, the thing you write on, I am guessing, because they didn't tell us, again, they don't always do this. I'm guessing we're somewhere in the NC, right?
NC?
Yeah, North Carolina.
God. I thought you were like the MC, like the Marvel Universe.
Oh,
the
Lord.
MU. Somewhere. I was like, the MC. I was like, what is that?
I'm North Carolina.
We have too many like shared
acronyms.
No, just like shared shows that we watch that the acronyms
us.
Could overlap.
Oh, my.
So when you said that, I was like, wait, is there a new conversation for Outlander called like the NC?
Something I missed on the Twitter.
It's like the OC, but the NC.
No. You made the exact same, not all of it, but the last thing you just said, you made the exact same comment when I first called it the NC as short name for it or whatever on one of our chapter discussions during the read along. And I loved it because it was just, yeah, I loved it. Okay. So we're in the NC. So Jamie and Claire and young Ian are continuing their travels from the ridge to the coast, right? To get ready to find a ship to go to Scotland. That's the whole goal. So as they're there, you see a little bit of their like setup and everything, and they're getting ready, I think, in the morning to carry on. And there's some noise that Ian hears, and it scares him out in the woods. And he's yelling, "Archbog, if you're out there, come here. I heard you what you said. I know you're going to do it. Blah, blah, blah. If you're going to do it, come and do it now. Be a big guy," all that. And of course, it's not Arch.
It could have been, though. But Jamie came out and was like, this is what he wants. Don't give in to this. This was the whole purpose. Arch wants to, while he may very well want to take something that precious from Ian, he wants Ian to be scared to have something precious to take. So this, what he's doing now, is almost more effective than him killing somebody.
That's the richness, is Arch could have effed off somewhere, who knows where. You know, getting his gold turned into money. Who knows? We don't know where Arch is. And it literally, it was not Arch, but it literally doesn't even have to be Arch. Ian's own mind and fear and anxiety about the whole situation and the fact that, yes, he loves his aunt and uncle and his dog, although we know the dog is not the target. It's enough for Bug to live in his mind. That's all he needs to do what he did here. So my guess is not only to show Ian's, I don't want to be tortured, but Ian's anxiety, like deathly anxiety with regard to Arch, right? And just where and whom Arch might strike, right? It's the unknown. That's the terror part.
It's also the unknown of Arch, because he's never presented himself to the Frasers as
a killer like that.
Yeah, like as the person he was before the uprising, before they chopped his fingers off, you know what I mean?
Well, this guy, we don't know anything about
fingers. I'm just saying they don't know him. They don't know that Arch. They know the Arch that's helped them on their house. They know the Arch that's been the factor. They don't know.
In the books, Jamie does, because he was in Ardsmuir with him, so he would have known. But yes, in the show, I don't even think Arch was in Ardsmuir. Did he ever make that comment? It's never made clear.
I'm not even going to pretend like I know the answer to that question.
I definitely don't know, but I don't remember him ever having a conversation about Ardsmuir, or it being pointed out to us. So my guess is, besides showing Ian's, obviously the main point is to show Ian's state of mind, right? But a nice benefit side dish, if you will, of showing that and keeping Arch, the character of Arch, in the viewer's mind, or front and center, at least once an episode-ish, or at least for this episode, is to do exactly that. Keep it in your mind. That's all. Remember what he said, and remember why, generally, or specifically, I guess, why Ian is so freaked. Not only because of what Arch could do, or, you know, could hurt his aunt or uncle, but what might happen otherwise in the future. So just remember that. That's all. And then we're with some, I don't even know. I don't think we were given a place except for the fact that it was on the, we don't even know if it was in the coast. I don't even know. It was just a bunch of, I just wrote Redcoat Soldiers Hangout. I don't even know where they were.
Like, does it matter where they are? They're lighting whores on fire.
The whole reason I say that is I like to give a name and a name. I like to give a place name, even if it's just a ridge.
You know, if we were reading the book, we absolutely knew where they were. So they're probably like, it's like probably a port town. So someplace in North Carolina with water. And
William doesn't yet have an assignment. And to this book reader's joy, we get mention of an Uncle Hal. So we know that signals right away that this is one of William's cousins. So one of Hal and Minnie's children. They have three sons and a daughter, I think. Henry Gray. So it is Henry, which is not necessarily totally important, but it does, again, we're going to probably, if he's introduced, we're probably going to see him again. And they are celebrating the fact that Henry does have a posting. I don't think we're told where. I listened to it twice. I didn't hear it, but doesn't mean it wasn't there. And in this same sequence, that's why I said it's just like Redcoat Soldiers hang out either before they go to war or before they get assignment, as in the case of William. Yes, as Summer said, this is the fireship scene. And while it's still awful, it's still absolutely disgusting, the book is definitely worse.
Correct. But before you go too deep into this scene, I did want to point out the thing.
That's all I'm saying.
The comment that I had about Mr. William Ransom, in that the actor they have hired to play him looks just like Jamie in The Dark. In all of the darkened, shadowed scenes, like his bone structure was very, like, bone structure alone, if you just went on bone structure and shadows, it looked like Jamie, 100%. Looked like Sam Heughan.
Even his nose has that, it's not quite straight like Sam's. It's straight face on, but I'm saying in the profile, it doesn't have a hump or anything, but it has a tiny little, like, it's just not, like, perfectly straight. And I'm not dissing anything. I mean, I love their noses. I'm just saying it even has that little bump or whatever you want to call it, like Sam's, at least to me when I see it.
Yeah, I'm just saying, go look at him. And that sounds terrible to say. He looks just like him in The Dark. So does everybody. But if you see him in a darkened scene where he's in kind of shadow, I could see it. The bone structure alone is, I think, where the real resemblance lies between those two actors.
So in the fireship scene, when William is the only person ever to even verbally or physically try to, like, not just save the person, but just like try to get everyone to stop doing what they're doing, or, you know, present any kind of word or action against what they're doing, we see the influence. So in his actions, we see the influence of Lord John, I would argue, and Jamie. Now, obviously, Jamie's would be the genetic influence and maybe his disposition. Lord John would be his upbringing, right? So we see William's sense of right and wrong, his sense of duty, his wanting to help others that I'd argue both Jamie and Lord John both have. But I also see I also wrote down Anne Claire's sense of self-preservation.
Yeah, she did not contribute anything. Did you mean Geneva?
Absolutely not. Although that's not a bad point. No, I absolutely meant Claire.
But Geneva has a sense of self-preservation. She married that
dude. That's true.
While pregnant to somebody else.
Fair. The reason I absolutely said Claire on purpose is because, yes, I know that she's not genetically related at all. So yes, she couldn't, and she didn't help raise him. So there's no sense of influence that could be related to her that he has, right? Or doesn't have. What I'm saying is he still has Claire's sense of self-preservation, which is to say not a lot.
Good God. So that's not really having any of her self-preservation because she doesn't have any either.
That's the whole point.
It's such a spinning conundrum of a phrase. Shame on you.
I just like to make you think sometimes, just sometimes, not every day. Just
not all the time, but apparently today, today's the day. You've been saving it.
Lallybroch. Roger is working on an instructions manual for time travelers. And it has a different name on the desk. Say what?
I said it's the guide to time travelers.
Isn't it called a practical guide for time travelers?
I think you're right. Like
however, they didn't get, and it doesn't matter. It does not matter. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying, yeah, we don't get a title. We just get through his dialogue and everything, and what he was looking through, we absolutely know what he's doing. And that is trying to put together something for the kids for later, for the, God forbid, later. As he's thinking, he discovers a gold ball shot.
Wouldn't it have been much smarter as an adult to just be like, I'm going to tell them to never do this. I'm going to pretend like this never happened, and I'm not going to let them know that they can do this because this is an unsafe thing. It would make more sense to pretend it didn't actually exist as a thing than it would be to encourage it by writing a guide.
Now, that is something that's covered in the books. I don't want to say the thing that spurs them on to this other thing, but in the books, he does both this manual or a practical guide, as well as, so that's like preparatory measures, right? Potentially training, preparation, information to keep you safe, or how to do it safely, whatever, or just information about information that might help you one day, not that we're encouraging you, etc. On the other hand, something in the books, we haven't gotten the show yet because the thing that might trigger it, or in the books, the thing that triggers it hasn't happened in the show yet. They may not do it, but because it may happen, I don't want to say it. But I will say the other project. In the books, something happens which leads to another project, which I honestly don't believe. I don't think it was never wrapped up. It was never finished. I don't even know how much it was started. But what they discuss is because something happens, they discuss, Roger and Bree agree that they want to begin slowly. It's not a quick project to map out, at least on Scotland, on the map of Scotland, to map out places of known, like ley lines, standing stones, that kind of thing. They want to make a map of places to possible passageways. Yes. Of place. Correct. Because yeah, I don't know how much the show is going to use, because the only thing right now that they use that we know of is the standing stones, right? We don't have any other discussion, and and they don't need it, but it works well in the books because we have such a more rich discussion, as you know, as far as ley lines and where things converge, and you know, there's a whole discussion of the stones aren't there making the thing happen. The stones, the discussion is the stones are a place, are a marker only of things, of a phenomenon that's already there. That's what the discussion is in the book. And thus, whether it's stones or other places where you find, you believe ley lines exist, that was what they were, that was this other project. So they have this, and they're both ultimately for the safety of themselves and the kids, right? So it's not like one, they're not against each other. But the good thing about this is, protection wise, is if they do it in the show, we don't know, is it can protect you as far as nowhere to stay away from. The practical guide, information about it, so it's like a primer, but it's also helpful if you ever need to, and how to do it safely if you have to.
Right, but here's my question. Mm-hmm. By the time you need that book,
do you have time to read it?
That's what I'm saying. Wouldn't it be too late? Because by creating that book, you kind of already have to let the kids know where the book is, so that if they ever do want to start traveling, that they know all the rules and such. But by the time they find that book after the fact, it could be too late.
Yes. And I want to say more, but I can't, because I can't give away like two whole books worth of spoilers.
That's fair. No worries.
So as he's doing this, he discovers a gold ball, which was one of the balls that Jamie
musket.
Had.
It wasn't gold. He didn't
know. A musket
know
ball.
Well, you're right. He knows it's gold now.
Well, yeah. So anyway, so he's like fingering that or playing with that. And when Bree comes in to talk to him about what he's doing, he's like, oh, and apparently I have this piece of gold. And Bree says, and so this is interesting. So Bree says it must be from the box, meaning the box of letters, right? And that's true. It could possibly be, because he's not looking at letters right now, but they're in and out of that box, right? In and out of the box of letters. You know what? I have a possible answer to one of my questions, wonderings from last episode, or two episodes ago. I think it was last episode. We, maybe from the live after show, but I think we talked about it. I think you asked me, Ginger, do you think that they're going to, maybe not every episode start and end, but do you think they're going to
continue? I just wanted to know if it was going to be a device.
Correct. Or even if not that, are they going to keep doing it? And I was like, probably not as a device, but probably they'll do. I hate to say this, but as far as discovering information from them and through the letters, I think we're done. Why do I think we're done? There's no way on this earth that 2 years have passed and they haven't finished the letters. There's no
way. But what if? You don't know how many letters were in there.
Well, it wasn't. 165 letters. I mean, it wasn't a ton of letters.
I'm just saying, don't discount the letters because they could very well have a letter come out in the next couple weeks.
Like I said last time, in case we don't get any other letters, we got what we needed most. Now, will the letters factor in the future? Abso-freaking-lutely. What I'm saying is I don't think that we will necessarily get the whole they read it on in front of the camera and then we go to Jamie and Claire writing it in front of the camera. I think we're done with that. But I think the letters absolutely are not going away. But okay, back to the shot or the ball, the musket ball. So Bree says it must be from the box. Okay, fair, right? Fair. That makes sense. But we may find out that that may be true or not.
You think that musket ball didn't come from the box?
Where's another place it could be from? Something that has a connection to the past that they have access to.
The desk?
Correct. We don't
know. I still didn't even see the desk. So this desk is...
Now, the thing about the desk is, I will say, it's probably very unlikely because even though it has the potential holding things for hundreds of years, people have used that desk. And if that was found, I think people may have
they would have taken it. I'm sure.
Exactly. So that's to me, that's why it's probably not from there. But it's just an interesting thought. Bree finds her broken clock radio. We find out it was a la Pixies.
Of course.
And then later on, I like to say this because it makes perfect sense in German, but not in English. When she and Roger are fragging the kids aus. I know. About what happened, what's this,
asking
what's going
the
on.
Children about it.
Correct. Basically interrogating-ish. And she's had enough. She's like, oh, go get ready for school. And she sends both of them away. So even though we know Mandy's not three, right? And like I said, I wrote, is it four or five? So five probably is not only a good compromise, it's also very likely.
Probably accurate.
I think so. Because she's going to school. You're not going to send a three-year-old to get ready for school, I don't think. I mean, they can get dressed, but
no. Well, a three-year-old's not going to school. They're going to preschool. If they're going to anything. And in that time period, they weren't going to school.
So they're getting ready for school. That's just like, that's not important to the plot at all. I only said that because it might point to some age stuff. And then Bree's like, oh, gotta run. Got an appointment. Toodles.
As you do. I have to go. I have to go be sexually harassed and spoken down to at a salmon ladder.
Back with the red coat posse? Or in this case, not really a posse. So this is interesting. This is interesting. Okay, we do meet someone whom we should keep our awareness of. That's all I'm going to say. Nothing else. So William has a meeting with a Captain Richardson. And Richardson says, hey, he basically... So we learn that Richardson is a spy, or at least he works in intelligence. He's an intelligentsia. And William is given a not quite spy task, more like an errand kind of, right? On his way to an assignment up north with General Burgoyne. So he finally has his assignment after he does this task.
But then he 100% got on his horse and was like, a quart of milk, a stick of butter, a pound of bread. Lord. Like, he 100% was having that whole conversation with himself in the forest. Somebody sent him to the store for groceries.
Well, he had fewer items on his list than that poor little girl did on hers. I still can't keep all that in my head. That was like seven items. I was like, girl, how in the heck in the heck in the... Richardson says, you need to go to the Great Dismal Swamp, take these notes, and don't open them or read them, to these people, 1, 2, 3, in Dismal Town. And as he's taking his leave,
he says, I would never move to a place called Dismal.
Oh, ever. No. Why would you? As they're taking their leave of each other, Captain Richardson says, see, you don't die.
Good luck with that.
That is not necessarily important. I'll just say, think of where he's being sent. Not necessarily the errand itself, but where he's being sent. So a potentially dangerous place, right? Ish. I don't think they really conveyed that it's that dangerous. Maybe that's not important. But the type of place he's being sent to, the errand he has, and the way he closed it. Like, don't die, please. He didn't even say please. F that. No, he said, see, you don't die. Like, you know, do me the honor of like not having to find someone else. Like, don't cock it up. Don't cock it up, right? Basically. Mm-hmm. Just maybe don't forget Captain Richardson.
I'll do my best.
Scotland, 1980. Bree's at her interview. She's interviewing to be a plant inspector without a penis.
You have them or you don't, man. What are you going to do?
back to the colony somewhere in the VA.
That was literally it. That's all you had to say about that scene?
Absolutely.
Shame because on you.
Go for it. I don't need to talk about all the misogynistic things he said.
It's not about talking about it. It's about you not even bothering to mention it.
Because you already did.
I know, but it was such a disgusting scene. And his whole like, he was like, you want to go get us some coffee, little girl? Oh, and don't, if you get me sugar and don't forget that, that'll be good for you. And I'm like, yeah, you're a piece of garbage, man.
Well, unfortunately, he was a man of his times. And I don't mean that to excuse him. I'm saying he was the norm.
But how shitty is that, that she was dealing with literally the same issues 200 years ago that she's still having to deal with right now?
That's true. That's ironic. I agree.
Ugh. Anyhoozle.
Somewhere in the VA, et cetera, wherever they are. I'm not sure exactly where the Dismal is. I think it's in Virginia. I could be wrong. Somewhere over there.
Is it bad that I think it's in Florida? Because it's wrong. I know it's not in Florida, but when I hear Dismal, I think of... And he said it was a swamp. So swamps and Dismal, I was thinking Florida. That's just me.
So William is unterwegs on his way. And my goodness, I say it again. I say it. I can't believe I just sound like that person.
Okay, Foghorn Leghorn.
That's what I forgot the name of. I say this at least once an episode, and I probably will continue. My goodness, they are moving and grooving straight through Echo. Like, it is so freaking dickin' fast. Like, wow. I will say that this William, meaning Show William.
Show William.
No, only readers will understand what I mean. This is not a secret. It's just a comparison. This William seems to be less problem prone than Book William. Now, it's possibly
he did get a giant stick through his wrist. Come on.
Yeah, but he did not have a snake or whatever it was chase him. He did not run into other Native Americans who tried to like sell him into slavery.
Oh, you're saying Show William didn't have to deal with
correct
as much as Book. But here's the thing: it was still a snake. Like, to the point that I think this is his Indiana Jones moment where he's like, "Why is it always snakes?"
Show William is less problem prone. Or accident prone, whatever, than Book William. That's what I'm saying. Book William has an endless litany of just stuff. That poor dude cannot often get a break. So while similar things happen, it's more all at once here than one after another. And he doesn't have, and I mentioned the Native Americans, he doesn't like get into that or, you know, have to, yeah, he doesn't run into them. Back in the NC. So Jamie, they're like, Jamie and Claire are there. And Jamie's like, okay, I'm going to get
procured. You just literally said Jamie like Elton John sings Benny for Benny and the Jets.
Oh, Lord.
Jamie. And every time you say that now, that's all I'm going to hear.
Jamie is going to procure passage on a ship for them to go to Scotland, or so he thinks.
This ends poorly.
And then just a little bit or a lot of it. So he goes to either an office or something. Wherever you need to go to do this, he does. He goes. And the dude, a Mr. Hartnett, basically presses Jamie into service but with a threat. He's like, well, if it's not you, you got to give me somebody. And if not, like the threat was there, like, yeah, you're going to be like taken into custody and made to do it. And Jamie's like, even though I like saved your life, my dude, and Hartnett like doesn't care to help him out in any kind of similar way. He's like, yeah, you saved my life so I could fight another day, my dude. So yeah, he doesn't have a lot of feels. He's pretty. Yeah,
absolutely no feels. No sympathy, no empathy, just.
Nope. He probably has a quota, let's be honest. He probably has a quota. So he goes back and he's like, look, Claire, our little trip to Scotland's going to have to be like, paused.
Did you call the last shot of this episode the way I called it? The very last shot of this episode.
Ticonderoga?
Yeah.
They told us it was Ticonderoga.
I know it was.
Oh, you mean did I know before if it was going to end like that?
I like the second they mentioned that it was Ticonderoga, like I was like, they're going to have the final shot of this episode be like an overhead shot of the city and then it's going to be like, bah, black screen.
Okay, I did not think of that specific view, but what I'm about to say probably would support how your brain would have done that. So, okay. So he's with Claire and he tells her like, yeah, you know, I'm going to have to fight. And she's like, excuse me, what? Excuse me now? Huh? And he's like, look, Claire, I want to fight. I want to fight for you and Bree and the grandkids and blah, 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 all this stuff. Okay, whatever. We got it. Good thing about this, the good thing about this is it gets us straight to the fighting and signals to us that they're doing away with the first whole set of ship stuff. No ship issues, no injuries, no losing Rollo potentially, no Stebbins. And thanks, I'm sure Summer is very thankful, no Guinea Dick, at least in the way he was. Ugh. Originally introduced in the,
you know, I had almost
in the book
cleansed.
Forgotten.
I had almost cleansed my psyche of that name.
Guinea dick, guinea dick, guinea dick, guinea dick, guinea. Okay, wow. If I say it too fast, it does not sound good. Guinea dick.
I hate that.
Claire is like, great. She conscripts herself as a surgeon. And Ian's like, great. He conscripts himself. He doesn't use the word, but as scout, right? Ian's like, okay, I'm going to take off. I'll go to Virginia and I'll meet you guys up somewhere up there. Toodles. And I could tell you the way my eyebrows rose, I was like, oh, they did not do this. When Jamie suggests or tells Ian, look, lad, I got to do this, but I promised your mom you should go on to Scotland your own. I was like, they are not.
They did not. No, but
they
had
will
they?
Not.
But it wouldn't have been the first time that the Jamie tried to ship him back on a boat.
I don't care what Jamie tries. I was afraid it was going to be a done thing. I was like, oh.
Could you imagine the uproar?
It's not. Okay, it's not. Whoa.
It would have been the fake out.
At
and then if
Dawn,
he,
you know, in Breaking Dawn when they had Carlyle's head ripped off and the whole big battle scene where half of the people died and then it was a fake out. It wasn't real. It would have been that.
Oh my gosh, that's been terrible.
It would have been
but
the
so
level
much
that.
Has to happen. Anyway, too much. Like, if anything I mentioned beyond that or under the umbrella of so much has to happen before I is a huge spoiler, so I can't do it.
Back at Lallybroch, Brockylal. I like that better, Brockylal.
Roger finds Mandy locked in the priest hole. That's awesome. That's just awesome. And she's like, let's do it again. Or giddy up, whatever she said. Now, depending on how they handle a certain thing.
What did you think a priest hole was going to look like before you saw the priest hole?
Well, I just say it's different than the book, but it was different as the priest. Then they exist behind walls and they exist under floors. So there's not one definition.
I know, but in my vision of a priest hole, it's under the floor. So
sure.
When he opened a door and she was just standing there, I was like, that's not a priest hole.
Well, I mean, it is because they called it.
I know.
But I know. Like, it was not what I was not expecting that, though. I was sorry. It was not the priest hole I was expecting. But, you know, a hole's a hole. They're all special.
That's what guys say.
You. So depending on how they handle a thing, it'll be interesting to see if this priest hole. Sorry. I think the fact that they just introduced a priest hole, the fact that it exists, they're going to use it. Somehow. I'm not going to say what or how or why, but otherwise, why do you do it? Unless it's just gratuitous for viewers to say or readers to say, oh my gosh, get a priest hole with a nugget, whatever. No, I truly think they're going to use it. What I'm trying to say is, without saying it, I wonder if the way they handle a certain thing, it'll be interesting to see if the priest hole is used in that manner. Because in the book, the way the priest hole, which was in the floor, is used, it's pretty, let's just say the priest hole in the book is pretty damn inescapable. This priest hole does not look that inescapable.
No, if by inescapable you mean it is one door with a latch that literally spins sideways.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
On like a nail.
We'll see. It just seems less effective than a hole in the floor, but maybe
we'll see.
The budget was too high for the hole. We find out Bree got the job. Woohoo!
Woohoo! Dude, did they give that dude a name?
Who? The guy who was interviewing her?
Yeah.
No.
Because I didn't get a name. I didn't hear it. But it wasn't Rob Cameron, right?
No. When I was looking at the end for the names of actors, I did not look. I looked for the person who was the builder because I was thinking, oh, I'm up for somebody. But I did not see or look for, I should say, the person at the interviewer. I did not look for that dude. So I can go back and maybe check later, but obviously it's not going to make it into this episode. Roger is having another existential crisis. He seems to have any time he time travels, right? So he had one. I don't think he had one early in his life or when he met Bree. He had it after he got to the past where he's like, what am I supposed to do with myself? I'm not trained for this. And now that he is no longer in the time where he finally found his calling, he's back in the future. He's like, not only,
but he's lost half of the special skills he had. So he can't really go back to his old life.
Do you mean singing?
Yeah.
The show is not honoring that. So
I know they're not, but I'm speaking of Roger.
Well, yeah, but Roger, now have they had, let's put it this way. Other than them going to the games, right, in season 4 before they went back. Other than that, they haven't really, they've never capitalized, meaning consistently. It is absolutely a part of the character. It is not that important a part of the character. And I don't mean because it's not, I'm saying it's not quite bug-like because at least they acknowledged it, right? But it's, right. But it's, and they acknowledge it in a huge way. I'm not saying I'm unhappy with that. I think they did an amazing, I loved it. The song he sang, all that. It was great. What I'm saying is it seems like once he went back to the past, even though I think he was playing an instrument at some point, or maybe I'm mixing up book and show, Roger, but my point is, even though he was hanged and he couldn't speak for a little while, it was never a sadness. It was a sadness that he was almost killed, absolutely. But it didn't seem to be a big deal about him not being able to sing. That was not any focus ever. So I don't think, although it's part of the character that has not changed, doesn't seem to be part of his identity. Does that make sense? The show's Roger's identity. Okay. So I mean, did he lose I don't know. I would argue that he probably didn't lose his voice, but he's certainly not.
But he lost his job. Like, he's clearly not working at the college anymore.
Oh, that. So, he left. Yeah, yeah.
So his life that he had before he left, he's no longer.
Well, and now he's got a wife and kids, so he couldn't necessarily easily get to Oxford anyway or wherever, right? So, yeah, he's having, it just seems, what I'm saying is, and it makes sense. I'm making light of this, but it's definitely not a light matter. I jokingly wrote, Roger's having another existential crisis. It seems to happen anytime he time travels, right? Which makes sense because his identity had to change, or he couldn't honor his identity equally in both times, right?
Sorry, I'm trying to decide which era he had more value in, not just value, like more value.
You're literally proving my point.
Exactly.
Exactly, right? And it's also interesting, they have a really interesting conversation about, so last week we learned that they actually did change the past because the fire still happened, but it was a different fire, and this specific fire was caused by matches, right? We agreed on that. The he's part of his crisis, or his vocational crisis, as he's talking to Bree, is that the whole discussion of predestination, and he's like, his one of his major struggles is as a Presbyterian, there is to a certain degree, because they're all there are different types of established or defined predestination. Different Christian sects that do believe in predestination define it differently, or to different degrees, I should say. So, and I am not familiar with one, like I can't like spat it off and define it. I cannot, let alone 12. So I'm not going to try. What every single theory of predestination has in common is that to some degree, God has a plan that is unchangeable, right? And God has a plan, and it doesn't matter what we, as I understand, like we can't change that, or whatever we do was like always meant to be. I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I'm getting it over my head. It's getting over my head. My point is, Roger is just saying that I used to have such firm belief, a belief that God was there, had things handled, right? He knew things were going to happen. But now we literally changed the past. It's a great metaphor, or it's not even really a metaphor.
Yeah.
Well, it is a metaphor, but it's a great example that literally defines Roger's internal crisis, right? Like, I used to be sure of myself, assured of his predestination, not his personal, but assured of his religion's outlook, right? Or his denomination's outlook. Versus now, oh my gosh, we changed it. I can't say that God has a plan that stays and goes forward. Because we freaking were part of it that just changed it in a small way, but it proves it can be changed.
But what if they never changed it? What if the same, like this, what if they always went back and did that? That's my problem with the time travel, because there's no, it's like if you.
The original newspaper notice mm-hmm. gave a different time. So some fire had to happen before they ever went back. That's the fire that was reported in the original fire, if you will.
Right. But it still happened. It's about course correction. It's like Final Destination.
That fire, the fire that they found the clipping about mm-hmm. was not a fire started by matches.
Well, they wouldn't have known it was started by matches if they hadn't gotten the letter, but that's neither here nor there.
What letter? You mean the
from newspaper Jamie clipping? Saying the letter from Jamie oh, that. Saying but that the fire had happened because of the matches. They wouldn't have known about the matches.
But that doesn't
that's
matter.
But you but mentioned you're matches. Right.
They would, okay, I would say they wouldn't have confirmation on the fact that they did. And as a matter of fact, I think that's very fair because they don't say to each other, oh my gosh, we did it. Meaning we changed the past until they get the letter, right? Or until they read the letter. So yeah, that conversation doesn't happen until Jamie mentions matches or they read that letter about the fire, right?
Right.
So, but that completes. So see, Roger wasn't having, I mean, he may have had like existential, like, what am I going to do in back in the 20th century? He may or may not have been having thoughts. But now that he has, from the last episode, confirmation that they did it, I think that's why we're getting a much stronger portrayal of his crisis.
Well, and they also need to give him something to do.
He does. What else is
that's
he doing?
The whole like problem. In the,
but he does have things to do. He fingers balls and he writes books.
Whoa.
He did.
And, you know, and then he, you know, discusses Nuklevies, which is coming up in this episode as well.
Off to the dismal swamp. Williaming about. Young Ian comes up and says, oh, hey, cuz. No, he doesn't say that, but he kind of slides up. He's not really sure, I don't think, yet, because he's only seen like the he's never met adult William, right?
He doesn't know it's him. I don't think he knew it was him until he said his name.
Exactly.
Because he wasn't in uniform. He wasn't identifiably anything until he gave his
exactly.
name.
Exactly. So William's arm has become infected. And when he says his name, we hear a little bit of Lord John's theme. But I don't think it's in a horn. It sounds like in a deep string instrument.
Say
like
wait. Maybe. Stop saying we. Can you just commit viewers, to saying I heard?
You and I are not the only viewers. Viewers are we. Maybe it's a royal we. Just let it go.
Oh, okay.
So.
Queen Ginger.
What is. Oh, stop it. What is Lord. Oh, I'm going to ask you a silly question. I won't ask you. Okay. Lord John's theme is typically a horn. And it goes. Da, 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 da. Much higher than that. But whoa, that's for a soprano. That's a freaking low. I don't know how I chose that octave. Da, 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 da. Oh. Sorry, that was Willie's. Damn it. Ugh, not going to take it out. Lord John's is typically a horn and it's da, 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 da. Okay, so that is Lord John's. And why are you laughing? Because you can't hear a difference?
Because it's not that I can't hear a difference. It's that it's out of context. So it doesn't sound like anything to me.
It's that's
just
fair.
You singing notes. So it
it's
doesn't.
It's just me la la da daing.
Right. It's not like you're going to do it. And I'm going to be like, oh my God. Yeah, you're right. It's Take On Me by Aha.
Stop it.
You know what I mean? It's like I'm going to catch on. I
it
won't.
It sounded like I sang Willie's on accident. It sounded like, why are you laughing?
I sang Willie's on accident.
I did.
Willie's.
It is, I believe, Lord John's theme. Da da da. No, sorry. Yeah. Da 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 da. Which is usually a horn. It sounds like a deep string, like, I don't know, a cello or probably not a bass, probably a cello.
Like, what's a deep string?
A deep sounding string instrument. Like,
I
so not
now.
A violin.
I figured it out.
Oh. I was like, what are you on about? I'm so confused at why you're confused. Ian plays Doctor.
Fair.
He plays Claire.
Not very well.
I mean, he's probably saved his life from imminent.
Though
imminent,
he was a great EMT, he did his best doctoring until he found somebody with higher medical experience to take over.
So there are snippets of some theme, and I'm thinking, again, we're with Ian and William, right? There are snippets of a theme, and I want to say, okay, it may not make sense, but just stay with me. It sounded like not the whole, like the whole major, like the whole main part of it, but it sounded like portions, very small portions of maybe Jamie and Claire's theme. Now, I know you're like, why would they put a love theme in there? Because he's not from Claire, right? Or of Claire. Got it. But we don't have a freaking Jamie theme. So it's my guess that we got maybe a teaser of the Jamie and Claire theme there to represent Jamie. I could be totally wrong, but I heard it. If we go back, I could point it out. Anyway, and we hear it sounds like we also get Lord John's theme as well. Again. Then Ian, in this scene, Ian also tells him like how he got with the Mohawk and what happened. He talks about what a death song, a Mohawk death song is.
It's just funny because the whole point where he's like, you know, I haven't done anything yet. And he's like, well, then you're not going to die. We're not writing you a death song because you haven't done anything worth
singing about yet. Also, because I know who your papa is and he would kill me if you died.
Oh, my God. Could you imagine?
No.
Hey, Uncle Jamie.
I'm sorry. I couldn't save your dude.
Rather unfortunate news.
So then I think, so the fact that I wrote it down as separate makes me think I probably heard correctly. Again, I could be wrong on some of this stuff. Theme wise, but then I believe we hear William's theme in two different instances or utterances. One is a woodwind, or both are on woodwind. And when we very first ever hear Willie's theme, at that point it's called, it's when it's at Hellwater, the maid or whatever, or maybe the aunt is walking the carriage. Okay, that's when we first hear Willie's theme, and it is pretty high, and it's probably a flute. At the very least, it's a woodwind instrument. So here again, it's with a woodwind. It's in a woodwind instrument, but it's at different pitches. Or I don't think it's quite. I mean, it might be an octave apart, but it's at different. Like one is played much lower, and then it's played much higher.
So should we just call this section of the show "Music Theory with Ginger"?
So to differentiate, last time for this section, Lord John's theme typically. Brass or horn. Horn is brass, but typically horn. And it's da 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 da. Willie's theme is da 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 da. Okay, that's Willie's theme, but higher. And then he Rollo lays next to him, or Rollo does something, and Ian says, quote, meaning
you're
speaking of Rollo. He already thinks of you as family. I wrote, ha ha, Ian. You're funny. Back in the NC. Summer's favorite part, my favorite part. Oh my gosh. The best, the highlight of the episode. Or the scene, the episode stealer, Tom Christie.
Oh, Tom Christie.
Tom Christie and the kiss, as Summer said, old man kiss. I wouldn't know better. I mean, if I examined it more, I probably would know, but I didn't look at it like that. The music, you have to go back and listen to Summer. First of all, I know you won't mind seeing the scenes of the scene of Tom Christie.
You know what the best part about the scene with him kissing her is? Katrina's face for the rest of the scene.
I know.
The rest of the scene. It's so perfect.
It's like, holy F monkey balls. Like, what the? Also, like, I'm glad you're not dead, but also, what the F just happened, right?
Right. And you notice first he was like, oh, you're not dead. And your husband's not dead either, right? Is your husband still
alive? Come, let me slap one on you or lay one on you. Slap one on you. That's a little bit violent. So this made me laugh. I didn't guffaw, but I cackled. So after he kisses her, but before they go up to the inn or whatever, or the pub, mm-hmm. restaurant, wherever it is they go, the music, you know, it's no theme. There's no theme talk here. The music, it sounded like a Western. It sounded straight up like a Western. I was like, what? It sounded like a Western. And I can't defend that. I can defend it in the way it sounded. I can't defend it for the choice. Not because I think it's bad, but because I just can't connect it to the storyline. I don't know why, but it sounded to me like Western music. It wasn't quite like, ooh, no, not like that. But it just sounded like a Western. You have to go listen to that Summer, if nothing else. I cackled. As I said, I'm so happy. I love that they wrapped up the Tom Christie storyline. I mean, if you're going to do it, you're going to do it. So I'm glad they did it. As I said, most of this before, he looks so happy and calm. His entire demeanor he's a different person. He is completely changed. we find out at, over their drink that, that he doesn't finish. And my guess is she walked away too. He says that he'd heard that Alan had left and hadn't returned or wasn't going to return. And so he had decided not to return to the Ridge. Like, I wonder what you actually heard or how you heard it or where that was from. Because, okay, it's very possible he heard that before Alan actually was killed, right? Because no one knew where he was, like, for an interim amount of time. Yes, indeed. He had placed the notice in the paper regarding the fire on the Ridge. I just love Tom Christie. I just love it. His delivery of, quote, "The Lord does answer prayer, you know," is beautiful and devastating. Like, you know, I know you thought it was kind of an icky day, and I kind of was with me and, you know, fire and brimstone and God this and God that. But I was true in that I always have been and will be a man of God. I still love the Lord, etc. But he's like either less, at the very least less, if not zero. Fire and brimstone hellraiser now, or hell preacher now, because he is transfigured. That's the best word for his face. Is his face appears transfigured. And he's like, the Lord does answer prayer. And we get, I'm pretty sure this is also straight from the book, right? Quote, "I have loved two women. One was a witch and a whore. Some say you are a witch yourself. Makes not a whit of difference. The love, oh my God, I'm going to get tears. The love of you has led me to my salvation and to what I thought was my peace. Once I thought you dead. And yet here you are. I shall have no peace while you live, woman."
No, all he needs to do is pretend she's dead again because he apparently had a little peace.
Hold on a second. I'm not quite done, but that's too funny. "Mind, I don't say I regret it," unquote. Oh, my God. Oh, that man. Ha! Love him. So we're about to go back to see Jamie. Is there anything else you want to talk about? I know we talked about him mostly earlier. Is there anything else you want to talk about Tom Christie?
I mean, I think I already said it. He just killed it. Like, I've never cared for Tom Christie's character, but I cared for this portrayal of it. So you weren't
even touched in the books by this scene?
No.
Interesting. So it absolutely is the character, the actor.
Yeah, for sure. I just think for me listening to it and or reading it, I did not three-dimensionalize him the way that this actor did. So maybe that's a fault of mine or something that's missing in me, that it's not something I anticipated happening.
It's not missing. There's nothing missing in you.
Well, it's just, you know, when you don't anticipate a thing and you're like, it never even crossed my mind.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. But you are, and you say, Lord, I'm about to bring out a prayer. No,
uh-oh.
I meant to say listener, not Lord. Dear listener, unless you are brand spanking new to us and you literally only started listening like for season 7, to our show anyway, what I'm about to say is not a rude thing. I am not saying this as in any judgmental fashion. I am merely restating words Summer has said many times.
Are we going to call me a robot again?
Yeah. And then yet again, she steals my words. But yes, Summer is the one who clarified herself as a robot. So I was about to say, Summer, don't forget you're a robot. She's not literally one, but compared to me,
well,
I'm like a drop of the hat.
I feel like I compartmentalize better than you do, for sure. So you have a lot more bleed over than I do, I think, of emotions.
Oh, emotion, maybe. That's funny because, yeah, I mean, there's layers to that. But in general, when watching a work of art, that's a bit far. I thought that scene was a work of art. What I'm saying is when watching a piece, an art form, whatever that may be, right? I know, absolutely, both of us can be mirrored. Both of us can be moved to tears. Summer will cry. Oh, I can't say drop of a hat. That's not it. But Summer cries at things that are deeply moving, right? Especially when it comes to art, whether it's like legit art or music, musicals or pop music. It doesn't matter. When it's something that touches her soul, she can go to pieces, right?
Yes.
Okay. So with me, That is 100% true as well. However, my general sensitivity is like my floodgates drop more easily than yours. Is that, I think that's a fair way to put it.
Yes, I believe I can cry equal amounts as you, but my threshold to get there is much higher.
Is a lot. You're less sensitive. I'm not saying you're not a sensitive person. I'm saying you're, or maybe, because that may sound judgmental. The sensitivity of your tear prick button.
I don't have one of those.
Okay. Well, that's something right there.
I'm like, I definitely don't have one of those.
I definitely don't. Just don't even gender. You made it up. You own it. It's not part of my anatomy.
Do not.
It is absolutely part of my anatomy, right behind my nose button. Claire reports back to Jamie about her meeting with Tom. It was cute. And then they eventually knock some 18th century boots to the soundtrack of their theme.
Okay.
Back with some other peeps near Dismal Town. Ian brings William to the physician he somehow magically has heard about that we haven't heard about.
Right. Like, he went in the woods to all of a sudden coming upon a house.
He said he talked to a neighbor, but I'm like, I'm wondering if they like cut that out in editing. I don't know. But it was, well, I'll get there in a second. So as he's taking him there, we meet Dr. Denzel Hunter. I think he says Denzel, but whatever. Denzel Hunter and Rachel. Did y'all notice the meet cute? Y'all notice the meet cute. The meet cute over the horse's nose between Ian and Rachel. That's all I'm going to say.
I'm just going to say that. I think Rachel is a little more of a hussy in this show than she was in the books.
As far as his Wajahuki Dink, quote unquote, chance or not with what's her nuts. So they have a meet cute over the horse's nose. And grossness over all the wound and pus in this episode. I purposefully stay away from Dr. Pimple Popper, and that is why. I can watch it on animals, at least in person, and it is like wonderful. But humans, no.
Many layers of things do they have to peel off of his arm to get to the part where they were like, maybe we should cut it off.
Speaking of gold balls, they were digging for some gold balls that ended up in Lallybrack in the 20th century. They were never going to get them, but they were trying.
I'm just saying.
Goodness have mercy. The next day, I'm guessing, because she said William's been like getting well or sleeping or something, like, okay, that wasn't the same day, I don't think. So later, I think it's the next day or sometime later. Ian is needing to leave. He's getting ready. But first he chats up Miss Rachel. And I loved the plain speech because she talks, and again, I'm one to talk. I totally get it. But she talks so fast. Unless you're listening, you totally may not even hear how many times she uses the word thee or thy. I didn't hear thy, but that could
thou.
Be that. What I did miss was there was zero use of friend. In the books, it was whenever she says William, right? Or when she's talking to Ian, but mentioning William, she would say friend William.
Maybe it's more expensive. Maybe they're paying her by the word.
She talks so fast, she can get it in. Anyway.
Not if you pay by the word.
That's true. So... not a observation, not a criticism, just curious. Like, you're going to do the plain speech and not use friends? Oh, maybe they like consulted with an expert and in this area like that, or maybe at this time frame or in the colonies it wasn't used. Maybe it was used in England. I have no idea. I am not a Society of Friends expert, but I'm wondering if the friends, I'm wondering if some consultant actually corrected that. I don't know. Because usually they like, you know, they usually want to be pretty correct. And they kept the thee, thou, thy, but they didn't keep friend, which is just so odd. But again, just interesting. All I'm going to say is that Book Ian is much more generous than Show Ian with regard. Book Ian is much more generous than Show Ian with regard to what he gives William before he leaves. Unless that rosary was worth a horse. In the book, he gives him, I thought he gave him some of the gold balls, but that may have been a bit sketch because, like, you're disguising gold as lead, so probably not. He gave him quite a gift, but he also gave him a horse.
I mean, that would be quite a gift.
He had zero.
I know, but I'm just saying, to a dude you just met, you're going to give him gold?
So, he leaves. Lallybrack, Brackylal. Roger and Bree discover a biscuit and crisp thief. Enter the character of the Nucklevy. Or at least someone they call that Jem calls the Nucklevy. So according to Jem, some person said he what, and he uses the pronoun. We are pronoun positive and this podcast. So some person, and Jem used the pronoun he. Some person said he was a knucklevy and said that he'd eat Mandy if Jem did not bring him food. So something's going on there. Yeah, it seems funny. It's a kid playing jokes. He stole it. I mean, he could be lying, right? We're not going to spoil anything, but I'm just restating what Jem said, or Jem, you know, insisted on saying. C'est tout. Hunters. So dismal town. Back at the Hunter's residence. William is now chatting up Rachel. She is shaving his face. Beard. Quite.
This was really intimate.
Like, literally her breath, I hope it did not stink. It was that close. Like, nothing but in his face.
That was a really intimate scene to have.
Well, it's all of it. It's all of it. Yeah, I know.
That's not what I meant by intimate, but yes.
Hussy-ish?
I do not recall book Rachel being that.
She absolutely did shave him, though.
Familiar, that's the word I want.
It felt, or nurse patient, it felt like a little more friendly.
I believe it, but this didn't feel perfunctory. It didn't feel medical. It didn't feel
a little bit more friendly than you would expect from a chaste Quaker who is helping out her brother's patient. Speaking of pronouns, I can't get nouns right. Forget that. Pronouns are limited. Nouns are limitless. That's why I say use pronoun. Holy Lord. So he says it was hunting. She's like, what were you doing out there, my dude? He goes, oh, it was hunting. Hunting brought me there. And she doesn't believe quite all of it. She's like, well, I don't think you're lying. I just don't think you're telling me all of it. And fair enough. And we find out, as she tells William, that the hunters will be leaving soon. They were put out of meeting due to their political stance regarding independence. And so thus they can't stay in. I don't know that they're leaving because they're put out of meeting, because they have a certain political stance regarding independence. They're pro-independence. They're for liberty. And Denny plans on enlisting as a surgeon. So regardless of whether or not they were put out of meeting, their beliefs were not going to change. So my guess is Denny was always going to enlist. So I don't think they're leaving now. They have to leave that area.
Right. Yeah, they're not leaving strictly because they were put out of meeting. It was all part and parcel. Yeah. That's how I took it.
No, one of their neighbors, we learn, is Cartwright. And this makes William pause a little bit, because Cartwright, Carver, and something else were the three names that Captain Richardson had told him that he needed to deliver these notes to. Oh my gosh. A petal of a flower, a wing of a butterfly. I mean, like, I could go on. William offers to accompany the hunter. She's like, look, I got to go north too. That's where my future lay. That too. My assignment is, I got to go up there. Well, he didn't say he was definitely British. Like, obviously but he didn't say he was a soldier, right? He's like, look, I got to go north anyway. Why don't I accompany you guys? And Willie's theme, in case there was any doubt, is all over the place in this scene. Da, 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 da. Now, I don't know why I go so low.
Ginger,
because it's low.
I wish someday in your life you can experience a conversation like this with someone.
What, because, with music popping out?
But the context is gone. I don't know any of the melodies
is
you're not singing
gone.
At me.
The context, like, is the scene with Willie.
It's like you're writing a musical in front of my very eyes.
The context is not gone. I said Willie's theme is all over the scene because William is in the scene.
I'm just talking about the physical notes, the context of the notes. Like, I'm not expecting them to rise, fall, or have a specific interval. Like, it's just...
Oh, it sounds random to you.
Yes.
It's like, I was going to go to the store to buy some cat food. And as I was walking from my car to the door, to open the door to the pet store or to the pet grocery store, whatever, Pets R Us.
Nope, you're bad at this.
No, I'm trying to... I could come up with a stupid tune. What I'm trying to figure out a way of what to say. Okay. So as I'm walking to the store from my car, I think of, and this is where it's dumb, what would my theme be as a walking theme? Shanananana, baby. I mean, like, that's rando. I don't know what's going on in my head. What does it sound like? Like, what is the conversation, or what are the thoughts, and how might I portray that in music? Like, I'm not saying that's dumb, because I hum and people hum all the time, but
No, but I'm telling you, that's how this conversation is.
That's fair. So that was a pretty decent representation just there?
It feels like that because, I mean, there's, I have no frame of reference of what the music should sound like. So you could literally be just...
I could literally say, row, row, row your boat. Maybe, okay.
Thank
not,
you.
Maybe not. Maybe not.
And
like
I'd
that,
be like, but... cool. I didn't realize that was a theme.
Lord have mercy, Samar. You are too funny.
Ugh, good Lord.
And the last scene.
Oh, no. There's one more scene.
What? There's only one
I
more.
I said, oh, no, there's one more scene.
Oh, I thought you were telling me. No, no, I missed one. I'm like, I haven't told you what it is yet.
No.
They arrive at Ticonderoga. Jamie and Claire. All four of them.
And then just as I imagined was going to happen, wide overhead shot. Black.
Yup.
And the episode ended. That was episode 4. Join us next when we will be discussing... episode 5, entitled Singapore.
Again, a special thanks to this episode's co-producer, Anna L. To find out more about how you can support us on Patreon, visit outlanderpod.com/Patreon.
And if you just don't have enough people to talk about Outlander with, please join us online at www.outlanderpod.com/group. And if you've ever had a hankering for some Outlander Pod branded merch, please check out our shop at www.outlanderpod.com/shop.
If you haven't subscribed to our newsletter, the Outlander Pod Gazette, please do. You can find us at outlanderpod.com/newsletter. And thank you as always so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @outlanderpod.